Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease. The doctors of the future are here." Well-
Hi, and welcome to Blue Zone Wellness, or rather Phase 3 Wellness is our new name. No longer Blue Zone Wellness, just so you know, we're no longer Blue Zone Wellness. We are now Phase 3 Wellness, and I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'd like to thank you for joining me here on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday afternoon here in the Orlando, Florida area. And we have a very interesting and insightful show for you today. I'd like to thank you for listening, especially my friends over in Costa Rica, welcome, as well as my friends here in the U.S. and wherever in the world that you may be listening. Now, if you are listening to this, if you happen to be listening to this broadcast on SkyAngelsRadio.com, you are listening to it recorded. Even though I am currently broadcasting live, the replay will be on Sky Angels Radio later in the week. Thank you for listening again. We have an interesting show for you today. I'd like to remind you that you can visit me at Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. You can also visit me at facebook.com/phase3wellness. Again, that's facebook.com/naturedoc and facebook.com/phase3wellness. Now, I'd like to also remind you that we are here every Sunday at the same time from 4 to 5 p.m. And I also like to remind you here on we broadcast from the Blog Talk Radio platform. So you can listen to blogtalkradio.com /phase3wellness. We also have the chat room open. If you like to come in the chat room here and ask a question or make a comment, or you can call in at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. I'm going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back momentarily, and we're going to get started right away with our first segment, the Weekend Natural News Review. Be back in just a moment.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/wordpress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/wordpress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We're going to go ahead and get started now. This is our first segment, the Weekend Natural News Review, where we look at articles that have come out during the week and that have emphasis on natural healing mainly. Sometimes we go into articles that are not specifically different information purposes that may not be specifically, the article itself may not be specifically natural health, but we will look at it from a natural health perspective. But generally speaking, this segment covers articles that have come out during the week dealing with natural remedies, fruit, vegetables, not exaggerate, anything, healthy foods, herbs, or any information that have come out during the week dealing with those things. And then, too, in our second segment, we talk about a healing food or number of healing foods. And in our last segment, we discuss a healing supplement or a healing herb. In our second segment today, we will be talking, our healing food, we'll be talking about five vegetables that you should be eating during the winter months. And then on our final segment, dealing with the healing herb or healing supplement, we're going to look a little bit at a couple of herbs. We've been talking about Siberian ginseng, and today we'll probably look at slippery elm bark, which is an herb, a tree, and we'll talk about that. So let's get started. The first article I want to discuss here today is an article from naturalnews.com, and it's entitled The New Statin Drug Scam, and how half the doctors on the recommendation panel have big pharma ties. Now, just this week, you know, you may have heard in the news that new recommendations have come out with respect to statin drugs, or those are drugs typically used for cholesterol issues, high cholesterol. And this particular article talks a little bit about that. And in this particular article, again, it came out this week, and it was published on November the 14th, about 3 days ago. And the author says half of the doctors on the panel that recommended a whopping increase in statin drug use have ties to big pharma or big pharmaceutical companies. So these increase of these doctors recommending that people take more statin drugs, half of them, according to this article, actually half of the doctors that made the recommendation to increase the number of people who are on, who changed the guidelines, which would essentially increase the number of people who would be on statins if they followed these guidelines, had big ties to the big pharmaceutical companies. The article goes on to say further that this past Tuesday, the American Heart Association and the American College of Cardiology issued the first new guidelines in a decade for preventing heart attacks and strokes, saying that guidelines which call for one, the article says guidelines which call for one-third of all adults to consider taking cholesterol-lowering statin drugs. So now the guidelines will bring in about one-third of all of the adults in the U.S. should be taking statin drugs, cholesterol drugs, but only for cholesterol. Let me read a little further what the author points out. He says, doctors claim the new guidelines will limit how many people with low heart risk are put on statins simply because of a cholesterol number. However, under the new advice, one-third of U.S. adults would meet the threshold to consider taking a statin, more than twice the 15% of adults who are recommended statins under the current guidelines. The justification for the panel having half its members with ties to big pharma, says the article. He says further in this article that ties between heart doctors and big pharma are so extensive that it is almost impossible to find a large group of doctors who have no industry ties. And this is one of the reasons over the years that the cost of medicine has spiraled out of control. And this is one of the issues. No one wanted to do anything about it, apparently, when the previous administrations were in. It was business as usual, and now we have this issue with, as we talked about last week, with Obamacare, and a lot of people have a lot of issues with it. And the fact of the matter is that nothing was done about the healthcare system all along, and now when a system comes in that may potentially be worse than the one we have now, those who could have done something about it when they had an opportunity to didn't do it. And so this is where we find ourselves in this situation. Nevertheless, continuing with this article, it says, in addition to continuing to target people with higher LDL cholesterol, the panel also recommended considerations of statins for, and it recommended those who have these following issues should be taking statins: people who already have heart disease, people between the ages of 40 to 75 with a higher estimated 10-year risk of heart disease, and people ages 40 to 75 with type 2 diabetes. So typically, these drugs are given for cholesterol, And now they're recommending them for people between the ages of 40 to 75 with type 2 diabetes, people ages 40 to 75 with a high estimated 10-year risk of heart disease, and people who already have heart disease. So not only do they want you taking it for cholesterol, but they also want you taking it for diabetes and heart disease. The article goes on to say, further, for many years, mainstream medicine and doctors have been promoting high cholesterol as a dangerous cause of heart attacks in order to sell huge quantities of highly profitable patent statin drugs. The truth is that high cholesterol is merely a marker for increased heart attack risk and not an actual cause. In other words, if you have high cholesterol, that is an indication or a marker or something that indicates that you have a higher probability of developing heart disease when compared with someone who may not have high cholesterol. Now, here's another thing that we have to look at in this. Where are people with high cholesterol, high LDL cholesterol, where are they getting their cholesterol from? The majority, if not all of them, they're eating it. You do not get cholesterol from fruits, vegetables, nuts, and grains, which is the diet that we talk about on here being the original diet given us by our Creator in the book of Genesis. If you eat that diet, your cholesterol will not be high. If you eat that diet, exercise, trust in the Creator, get plenty of water, air, rest, diet, self-control or temperance, that won't happen. People who have high cholesterol are eating it. You do not get cholesterol but from other animals. Now, the liver produces HDL, or the good, which is considered a good cholesterol, called high lipoprotein cholesterol, basically, and density. And so, when we think about it for a second here, let's stop and consider what's being said here. Most people would prefer, and I say this by looking at the situation that we have, it is clear that most people would prefer to take a pill and risk the side effects and the expense than to change a diet that would actually bring their cholesterol levels down by eradicating the thing from their diet, which is giving them the bad cholesterol in the first place. And this is one of the reasons that many of the pharmaceutical companies and drug companies the pharmaceutical companies have become so powerful because of the refusal of us to live healthy lives, to take responsibility of our own health care. And because we haven't taken responsibility of our own health care on the whole, the majority of us, now when I say that, I'm speaking generally, I know some people do, but because we have so many people that have not taken responsibility for their health care, now we've created an atmosphere that has allowed essentially the state to take over and to force you to get insurance, to buy insurance. And so, again, we talked about that before, and we have rights. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the program about some of the legal rights and some of the other things that are tied in, even to vaccines and vaccination, et cetera. But to consider this, to continue this article, the article says, further, the high cholesterol myth took a huge blow last year when renowned heart surgeon Dr. Dwight Lundell stepped forward to expose how embracing the high cholesterol myth was wrong and the harm that had resulted. The article says, further, that Dr. Lundell stated that the recommendations to lower cholesterol as well as those who severely restrict fat intake are no longer scientifically or morally defensible. And he quotes him. He says, further, Dr. Lundell explained that the real culprit for heart disease was inflammation in our arterial walls and injury and inflammation in our blood. Simply stated, Dr. Lundell said, quote, without inflammation being present in the body, there is no way that cholesterol would accumulate in the wall of the blood vessel. So again, we've talked on here before about inflammation, and you've heard me, if you listen to me before, if you listen on a pretty consistent basis, talk about some of the things that help reduce inflammation in the body, being those laws of health that we talked about, and herbs such as turmeric, and there are other herbs that help with the inflammation. But eating healthy, making sure that pH is in an alkaline level as opposed to the acid level, These are the things that help you flee from having eating a lifestyle that would ultimately tend to giving you an internal environment that is given to inflammation, which is not a good thing. Overall, that inflammation is a major marker for disease. He goes on to say further in this article, the recommendations for increased statin use flies in the face of increased evidence of the harm that statin drugs cause, including harm to the very cardiovascular system that they are supposed to protect. One of the worst effects caused by statin drugs, he says, is that they severely limit natural production of coenzyme Q10. CoQ10 is vital for muscle health and longevity, and the heart happens to be one of the largest muscles in the body. Now, we've talked on here before about CoQ10 or coenzyme Q10, very, very vital, and the heart may very well have more CoQ10 in it than any other organ in the body. Not only that, CoQ10 is extremely, extremely important. It's been shown in studies to even be able to reverse congestive heart failure. And so whenever you're running into a situation where statins are affecting the amount of CoQ10 or coenzyme Q10 in your heart, you're of course going to have problems. He says further in his article, statin drugs also interfere with the availability of vitamin K2, which is essential for good cardiovascular health as well as for healthy bones. He says, among other harms, statins also have recently been linked to decreased testosterone production and sperm counts. Finally, he says, in 2012, the FDA was finally compelled to mandate new warnings on statin drugs due to mounting evidence of 1, memory loss, 2, muscle pain, and 3, increased risk for diabetes. Now, it's interesting because if the FDA was forced to release a warning, among other things, that statins actually increase your risk for diabetes, and here we have this new panel, which half of the doctors on the panel have ties to pharmaceutical companies. Here they are recommending statins for those with diabetes. So why would you recommend statin for those with diabetes when the FDA had just issued a warning that statins actually can increase the likelihood that you would develop diabetes? Finally, he says, and what should have been a final nail in the coffin for statin drugs, shortly after FDA mandated warnings, a new study found that statin drug use leads to accelerated coronary artery and aortic artery calcification, both of which greatly contribute to cardiovascular disease and mortality. So there you have it. Statin drugs, the major benefit of statin drugs are to the pharmaceutical companies. And like I said earlier, if you're eating cholesterol from eating animal and animal products, that's where you're getting your bad cholesterol from. If you stop eating the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol, you stop eating the cholesterol which is contained in animal and animal products, then naturally your cholesterol will go down. No need to take statins and end up as a diabetic or end with some of these other side effects that I just pointed out as referenced in this article that we just reviewed. And it's not a matter of whether or not you believe you should be a vegan or a vegetarian. It's a matter of science and it's a matter of your health. And this is one of the things that you need to do if you're eating it to take control of your health. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. We are going to go over now to our next article. We're still in our first segment, which is the Weekend Natural News Review segment. And in this segment, we're going to talk about something that is very, very interesting. We're going to talk about vaccines. We have the flu season coming up now. Many people will be going out getting vaccinated, but we're just going to talk about vaccines in general. And this discussion will be based on an article from Mercola.com, Dr. Mercola, and it's entitled "How Vaccine Policy and Law Threatens Parental Rights in America and Rich Rights in General." And in this particular article, Dr. Mercola is referencing a video movie, a documentary that was just apparently been released, and they're allowing you to watch it for free through the 23rd of this month, and it's entitled The Greater Good. And if you happen to be on the chat right now, I'm going to put the the link to this article that I'm referencing, and if you would like to, you can watch that documentary for free at his site up until the 23rd of November. It's called The Greater Good. And this article is actually based upon this film. And in this article, he points out how the greater good weaves together the stories of families whose lives have been forever changed by vaccination. And he says it shows how modern medicine, especially when driven by politics and big business, can rob you of some of your most basic rights. And the results of such politically and financially driven policies, he says, can be devastating. And one movie reviewer who saw the groundbreaking documentary that we're talking about discussing here said, quote, "What's being said is staggering, especially if you don't know too much about the science of and politics behind vaccines." And that's from the LA Weekly. And to go on further into this article, Dr. Marcola points out by saying, goes on by saying, public health officials have long insisted that vaccines are the best way to protect the public health. And as a result, the number of doses of vaccines included in childhood vaccination schedule has tripled over the past 30 years. They've gone, he says, from 23 doses of 7 different vaccines in 1980 to 69 doses of 16 different vaccines in 2010. Let me read that again. It has tripled over the past 30 years. So that means it's gone up. If it's tripled over the past 30 years, it means it's gone up each year by 10. He says from 30 years, from 23 doses of 7 different vaccines in 1980 to 69 doses of 16 different vaccines in 2010. He goes on to say further that, however, alongside the rise in administrative vaccines, we've also seen a significant rise in children with chronic disease and disabilities. He says, for whatever reason, our kids are getting sicker. Infant mortality has also risen. In 1960, he says, America ranked 12th in infant mortality among all nations of the world. By 2005, we ranked 30th. Furthermore, he points out, more full-term babies die before their first birthday in the U.S. than in most European countries, and the U.S. gives its infants more vaccines than any other country in the world. Could this be a coincidence? He says, the truth is, we don't know. However, he says no one has formally and independently studied the health outcomes of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children, and this is something that needs to be done not just for each individual vaccine, but also for multiple vaccine combinations. He goes on to point out how the research is incomplete and that is a major part of the problem. He says, how can you claim a pharmaceutical product like a vaccine is safe for everyone and that using multiple vaccines from the day of birth throughout childhood is a wise public health policy, when that policy has not been adequately studied? As a nation, the U.S. is gambling the health of its citizens on assumptions. And then he references the film, and he quotes, says that it's certainly the certainty is not scientific. He says, so the vaccines are currently approved based on research submitted to the government by the drug companies that have developed the new vaccine and funded the pre-licensure studies. Many of the studies, he says, drug companies conduct do not use true placebos and have only a few hundred or a few thousand healthy people enrolled who do not match the health profile of the millions of people told to get the vaccine after it is licensed. He says further that the safety of vaccine policies are primarily based on the word of the companies that produce and profit from the vaccine and enjoy a liability share from vaccine injury lawsuits in civil court that was given them by Congress and the Supreme Court. Now let's stop for a second. Vaccines are put on the market without being scientifically validated, because remember, they're claiming that what they're doing is scientific. They're put on the market. The companies themselves, for the most part, according to this film and this article, actually conduct the studies on the vaccines that they're ultimately going to profit from. Not only that, the politics of it is that now you go, they go and they get a, they get protection from lawsuits for the vaccine that they knew that they didn't do proper research on. So now they go and they get protection from lawsuits. So you're going to put a product on the market, not sufficiently tested, and then yet call it scientific, get it licensed, get protection from lawsuits, and get the Congress and the Supreme Court to go along with you. He says, is this wise? Furthermore, the mass vaccination program takes a one-size-fits-all strategy, he says, approach. It does not acknowledge that we all are individuals with different predispositions and health status, which can play a significant role in how we react to vaccines or even prescription drugs. So he says, for example, research by Dr. Natasha Campbell-McBride indicates that children with compromised gut flora are particularly prone to vaccine damage. He says, further, currently there is almost no individual screening done by most doctors to assess whether an individual is at high risk for having a vaccine reaction that can end in serious health problems or even death. And then he says, wouldn't it make sense to do everything possible to minimize vaccine risk? After all, while increasing numbers of parents opt to delay vaccinations or opt out of vaccines for their children, there are many parents who want to vaccinate their children, and they deserve to have confidence in everything possible being done to minimize vaccine risk for their child. Being able to easily and inexpensively decrease a child's chances of experiencing an adverse reaction should be embraced and encouraged by all health officials and doctors rather than conveniently dismissing the legitimate vaccine safety concerns of parents as anti-vaccine and anti-establishment. And see, this is what happens to label people with certain labels so as to minimize any true concerns or opposition to a particular mindset. So by labeling someone with a particular title, you can pretty much, once they're branded, make them appear to be lunatics or fringe, and therefore stifle any real conversation or discussion about an issue which may very well have validity. And so this is part of the strategy, if you will. Now he goes on to point out to discuss the vaccine Gardasil. Now, as many of you who are listening may know, in 2006, Merck released Gardasil, which is a vaccine designed to protect young girls and women against men infected with 4 strains of the human papillomavirus, or the HPV. Now, as he points out in this article, the idea was that if HPV infection, which is clear asymptomatically within 2 years by more than 90% of those who get it, is that HPV-associated cervical cancers in women would be prevented. So let's stop for a minute and look at this, what he's saying. This HPV virus, 4 different strains, is cleared up without any symptoms within 2 years by more than 90% of those women and young girls who get it. And yet, because of the risk of cervical cancer, which is associated with why this virus or why this vaccine should be given now, or the reason given to why this vaccine should be given, is that the idea is that HPV infection is associated with cervical cancers and women would be prevented if they're given this vaccine, Gardasil. Now, one of the 3 vaccine injury cases featured in the Greater Good movie is that of Gabby Swank. He said, a 15-year-old honor student who decided to get the Gardasil vaccine after seeing a B1-less Gardasil vaccine advertisement on TV. Like so many young girls, the article says, she wasn't warned about any possible side effects when she got the shots, which are given as a series of 3 injections. Gabby is now a Gardasil injury statistic, a young girl permanently disabled by the vaccine. And at the time the documentary was filmed and discussion, she had already suffered 2 strokes and experienced partial paralysis. She also lost part of her vision, and today she suffers frequent seizures. When she was in high school, many days she had to use a wheelchair to get around school due to muscle pain as well as chronic fatigue. He says further that Judicial Watch, the public interest group that investigates and prosecutes government corruption, recently issued an update on adverse reaction reports to Gardasil. The documents obtained from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA, under the provisions of the Freedom of Information Act, detailed 26 new deaths reported following HPV vaccination between September 1st, 2010 and September 15th, 2011. That's 26 deaths of young, previously healthy girls in just 1 year. Now, he also talks about some of the other serious side effects that happened or that were reported during that time frame, that same year time frame. Now, the ones who were fortunate enough not to be killed, also, here are some of the side effects that they suffered. Seizures, paralysis, blindness, pancreatitis, speech problem, short-term memory loss, Guillain-Barre syndrome, and ovarian cysts. And between May 2009 and September 2010, 16 deaths occurred after Gardasil vaccination. And for that time frame, there were also 789 reports of serious adverse reactions, of which 213 resulted in permanent disability and 25 resulting in a diagnosis of Guillain-Barre syndrome. And this is reported, he cites Judicial Watch, who were able to get these documents under Freedom of Information Act from the FDA. So now let's stop and consider this for a moment with respect to these vaccines. You see why they wanted to get judicial protection from the Congress and from the U.S. Supreme Court. They want to be able to make as much money as possible without sufficiently testing these vaccines, without sufficiently giving people, warning these young ladies of the potential side effects, and then be free and clear from any type of responsibility of something they're putting on the market that are hurting and killing people. And not only are the pharmaceutical companies at fault, but also the congressmen and the Supreme Court that allows this to occur, they're also at fault. He goes on to say further, he says, in this particular article, is at Mercola.com, it's Dr. Mercola. He says, according to Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton, these reports, quote, these reports raise additional concerns about Gardasil's questionable safety and provide ample reason to end the push to give it young girls and boys. And the CDC's continued caginess on reported deaths is disturbing. Federal, state, and local officials need to stop promoting this vaccine for children. Unfortunately, Dr. Mercola continues, many elected officials are doing just the opposite. For instance, he says, Texas Governor Rick Perry is a perfect example. In 2007, he signed an executive order mandating all 11 and 12-year-old girls in Texas to get the HPV vaccine. Of course, fortunately, he says, the law was overturned 2 months later after a firestorm of opposition. Many have now, he says, connected the dots and exposed his too cozy ties to Merck, the maker of Gardasil. More recently, California Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill allowing minors to be given Gardasil vaccine and other vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases without their parents' knowledge or informed consent. Now, interestingly enough, as he pointed out, first you had Governor Rick Perry out, who has a very cozy relationship with Merck, and then he signs an executive order mandating or requiring every young lady, every young girl between the ages of 11 and 12, to be vaccinated, requiring it by law. And yet, you're going to require this by law, and yet the company that produces it, they're protected from a lawsuit. They're protected from any of the negative side effects that could occur. Next, Dr. Mercola says in this particular article that he goes on to point out how, according to recently updated guidelines by the Federal Preventive Services Task Force, women over 21 are now to be dissuaded from annual pap smears. He says instead the panel recommends that women between 21 and 65 get a pap smear test done every 3 years, stating that evidence is still insufficient to weigh harms and benefits of test screening for human papillomavirus. He says other cancer groups agree, as reported by Reuters. Quote, everybody agrees on almost everything. Let's get rid of regular annual pap testing. Let's get rid of teenage screening. Let's screen women who aren't getting screened, said Debbie Saslow, the American Cancer Society Director of Breast and Gynecologic Cancer. The problem with this stance is that pap smears prevent cervical cancer deaths far more effectively than the HPV vaccine ever will, says Dr. Mercola. And it's hard to compare the potential side effects of the HPV vaccine with the potential side effects of pap tests. He says, I've never heard of anyone dying or becoming paralyzed from a pap smear. He says, now, I don't necessarily disagree with their recommendation to reduce the frequency of pap testing, but I question the double standard that is so readily visible here. Why are cancer groups recommending getting rid of a safe and effective screening method, which we know saves lives, while vigorously advocating the clearly risky HPV vaccine? He says, for example, the National Cervical Cancer Coalition offers the following response to the question about Gardasil safety. Quote, the FDA has licensed the vaccine as safe and effective. This vaccine has been tested in thousands of females, 9 to 26 years of age around the world. These studies have shown no serious side effects. The most common, he says, side effect is brief soreness at the injection site. And he goes on to say, it does not even hint at the many thousands of serious adverse events reported after Gardasil's vaccination through the government's vaccine adverse events reporting system since its approval, including 26 deaths in the past 12 months alone. He says, furthermore, the death rate from cervical cancer in the United States is a mere 3 per 100,000. So your daughter has a much higher risk of dying in a car accident than she does of dying from cervical cancer. He says cervical cancer rates are even lower in some European countries. He goes on to say that the reason why the mortality rate is so low is because the immune systems of the vast majority of women are usually strong enough to clear up this kind of infection on its own, and does so in more than 90% of all cases. Even the CDC admits to this fact, he says, on their website. And again, I'm not going to finish the rest of the article, but you can read it. It's at Mercola.com, and it's entitled How Vaccine Policy and Law Threatens Parental Rights in America. So if you are a parent that has a young daughter and she sees an ad for Gardasil or for any vaccine for that matter, you need to take very, 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 you need to be very, very careful. You need to do your research. You need to find out what they're putting in these vaccines. It's not hard to do. And when you look at some of the, when you look at some of the constituents of some of these vaccines, you should really, really think twice before subjecting yourself or your family to some of these vaccines, to these vaccines in general. Again, we said before, you have a God-given immune system that can protect you from any disease or abnormality that under the sun. It's just a matter of keeping that immune system up to par, keeping it functioning through beneficial lifestyle habits, etc. Now, you are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to pivot over into our second segment where we're going to be talking about the healing food. We're going to be looking at 5 healthy vegetables you should be eating in the winter, and we will probably go after that. We'll probably not take another break. We'll just pivot over into our final segment, which is our healing herb, healing supplement segment. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work, or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
Hi, welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for listening. And we are now in our next segment, the healing food segment, and we're going to be talking about 5 healthy vegetables that is a good idea that you eat during these winter months that we're going into. The first one is artichoke. We're not going to spend a lot of time on these, but artichokes are an excellent source of fiber. They're also an excellent source of vitamin C. All fruits and vegetables have fiber, and that helps, as you most of you know, it helps keep your moving, it helps keep your gastrointestinal tract clean out, it helps keep your colon, helps reduce the likelihood of constipation. But artichokes are an excellent source of fiber as well as vitamin C. Not only that, they have also been seen to help increase your bile flow and thereby aid in your digestion. And again, it's very important. Good digestion is crucial to good health. You know, artichokes can be boiled, fried, they can be boiled. I recommend eating fried food as less often as possible. You can avoid it totally, that's good, but if you're going to eat it very infrequently. Artichokes can be fried or boiled, and if you're boiling these, you should avoid while you're boiling them so that the acids in the artichokes can escape in the steam. Next is kale. Now, kale is a vegetable that's packed full of beta carotene. And again, beta carotene is good to help fight off cancer, help build the body resistance to things that would get into you, or actually help create an internal environment that would set you up or prepare you to be diagnosed with cancer, as well as some of the other diseases and abnormalities. Kale is also high in vitamin C, vitamin K, as well as calcium. Now, that these vitamins and minerals have been known to control the inflammatory process, all of them, beta carotene, vitamin C, vitamin K, and calcium. And so here you have in kale. Now, if you notice, all of these vegetables are in harmony with the colors of the rainbow that you've heard me mention before, if you've listened to me before, when I've talked about eating in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, the 7 colors of the rainbow, and eating in harmony, eating as close to the diet, as to the garden as possible. When you take those two elements, eating as closely to the diet as possible and eating in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, those being red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet, then you are on the road to health. Next is cabbage. Now, cabbage is one of those foods that is highly regarded among natural practitioners for being very, very, very effective against cancer. Cabbage juice, raw cabbage juice, is very, very effective against cancer. And there's red cabbage, there's cone cabbage, and it's called the standard cabbage. And cabbage is considered an herbaceous flowering plant, and it's unique because of its short stem. And a lot of times you'll see that cabbages serve raw in salads, but of course it can be cooked and put for soup. Sometimes it can be eaten after being cooked just by itself or with rice, of course. And sometimes it's put in soups, stews. Then some people eat stuffed cabbage, etc. But what about the health benefits of cabbage? I've just noted one that is very beneficial to help prevent cancer and for cancer as a whole, because it's full of vitamin B, it's high in vitamin C, it has calcium, it has magnesium, it has phosphorus, it has protein, and it has zinc. Again, all of these vitamins have been known to be beneficial at reducing inflammation, again, which can help prevent swelling in the body and help reduce disease forming. As I said before, inflammation is the underlying cause, is one of the markers for many, many diseases, including cancer. And so by eating, so for artichoke, we talk about kale, we talked about cabbage. There's another one that may not be as common to you. It's one called arugula. And arugula is a green leafy vegetable that is in the same family as broccoli, which is also very beneficial for cancer, to fight off cancer. cauliflower and cabbage. It can be eaten cooked or it can be eaten raw. And it's often recommended by nutritionists to consume it with a small amount of oil. And the idea being that the oil you use to cook the arugula in, it contains fat, which may help your body absorb the nutrients better. Again, it is full of vitamin A. It has vitamin C, vitamin K, calcium, and iron. And so it's also been shown to actually prevent cancers, as it is in the cabbage family. As I pointed out, cabbage has been shown to be very, very advantageous for helping to fight off cancer, as is broccoli. Arugula has also been shown to help prevent macular degeneration of the eye. So again, we have artichoke, we have kale, we have cabbage, we have arugula. And our final one in our discussion that we're having here is winter squash. Again, winter squash, of course, is a category of vegetable that contains pumpkin. It's in the same family as pumpkin, butternut, spaghetti, and acorn squash. Now, winter squash have high levels of carotene, as well as vitamin C, of B1, of pantothenic acid, B5, folic acid, and fiber, as well as potassium. Again, these all of these nutrients have been shown to help protect the body from cancer, diabetes, heart disease, etc. So here you have five foods, healthy vegetables, that would be a good idea to consume on a very frequent basis during the winter, and also to consume. It's also a good idea to consume as much fresh fruit as possible. Just don't eat the fruit and the vegetables at the same meal, with one or two exceptions. You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm your host, Dr. Keith Henry. Now we're going to go into our final segment for these last 12 minutes or so. And this final segment is our healing herb, healing supplement segment. In the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about Siberian ginseng. And we've talked about how Siberian ginseng is beneficial in cancer and mumps, how it's beneficial in chronic fatigue syndrome, Lyme disease, tuberculosis, viral infections, depression, stress, diminished sex drive, and menarche disease, and some other things. We talked about how when combining it, how preliminary studies in Russia, rather, confirmed the use of Siberian ginseng, also called elytra root. Preliminary studies in Russia confirmed that the use of the herb for people undergoing chemotherapy as well as radiation therapy for cancer helped to alleviate side effects, and also to help it help bone marrow recover more quickly. And so again, as I said before, I do not advocate chemotherapy for cancer. I do not advocate radiation for cancer, but it's your choice. And if you choose to do that, to go that way, there are some natural substances that you can take to help offset some of the damage that you will endure from the chemotherapy or the radiation. But I just want to give a brief recap and a review on that and move on to what we want to talk about today. And what we're talking about today is one of my favorite herbs, which is slippery elm. It is a very, very, very efficacious herb. Slippery elm is a large tree that is native to here in North America, and it can be found planted along streets and growing in forests, clear up to Quebec, clear down here to Florida, even out in Dakota, even out in Texas. And it frequently reaches a height of about 60 feet. And the inner bark of the trunk and the branches is collected in the spring for medicinal use. Now, slippery elm bark, added to hot water, has a slippery consistency, and this is why where it gets the name from, slippery elm. English settlers in North America actually noticed its widespread use by the Native Americans. And what a lot of old naturopathic doctors would tell you and herbalists would tell you, that if an Indian used an herb, you can be sure that herb or that plant or whatever was very, very, very efficacious. And if an Indian used it, you needed to put that into your repertoire. And so, as I said earlier, English settlers here in North America noticed how widespread slippery elm was amongst the Native Americans. And what they did was they soaked the inner bark in water and they applied it to wounds. The slippery elm bark would then dry into what was basically a natural Band-Aid or a natural bandage. The Native Americans also wrapped slippery elm around pieces of meat to help prevent spoilage or to prevent spoilage. It was mixed with water to make a soothing gruel for children and for people, for sick people of any age. And I could actually take this whole show just discussing slippery elm or any herb for that matter, and you would be astonished at some of the amazing things that can be done with this herb that has been given us by our Creator. Now, let's look at some of the evidence of the benefit of slippery elm. Now, as I said earlier, slippery elm tends to have a soothing and a healing effect on any part of your body that is brought into contact with. And it is used in natural medicine. It is used in the treatment of sore throats. It's used in indigestion, any type of digestive irritation, stomach ulcers. It is actually capable to neutralize excess acids in your stomach as well as your intestines. So usually if there's any type of a problem, gastrointestinal problem in there, within reason, slippery elm is going to typically be one of your go-to remedies. Not only can it be used internally, but it can also be used externally to help heal wounds and burns and to relieve irritated and inflamed or itchy skin. And like I said earlier, it has a mucilage texture to it once you add it to water. It's almost similar to I don't want to say pudding, maybe a very thick pudding. Once you add water to it, but it's an excellent remedy for irritation as well as for inflammation of your reproductive as well as your respiratory symptoms, as well as your urinary tract. And for instance, there, let's look at some specific diseases that it may actually help. For instance, you have Crohn's disease, food poisoning, and irritable bowel syndrome that can be helped potentially by Crohn's disease. And again, I'd just like to say for the record that nothing that I'm saying here should be construed as medical advice. I'm not attempting to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. It is not approved by the FDA, this particular herb, not as none of the herbs and none of the remedies that I've mentioned or talked about on the show. Always consult your physician or your healthcare practitioner or whatever, whoever your healthcare practitioner may be. Now, in terms of Crohn's disease, food poisoning, et cetera, slippery elm bark actually treats or it can treat irritation caused by colitis, chronic diarrhea, esophagitis, gastritis, and as well as duodenal and peptic ulcers. Duodenum being part of your small intestines. See, the bark consists of an abundance of this mucilage, as I said earlier, and it's composed, and the material it's composed of is easily digested. Not only that, it's non-toxic, and it consists basically of complex carbohydrates in inside of your body. And because of this mucilage, of this soothing mucilage, tends to soothe any inflammation and irritation of the mucous membrane which line your stomach and your intestines. Scientists believe that taking slippery elm by mouth induces a reflex reaction that causes the stomach to secrete more mucus. Whether that be the case or not, many people have gotten a lot of relief by taking slippery elm bark who've had irritated and inflamed tissues in their gastrointestinal tract. Now, again, you also need to, when you're using that, we don't just want to take these herbs and whatnot and consider them without taking into account the cause of the problem in the first place. Now we have about 5 minutes left, so we'll see if we can't finish up this brief talk on Slippery Am. And again, this is not an exhaustive talk concerning Slippery Am. Like I said before, we could spend the entire hour talking about Slippery Am alone, but we're just talking in general a little bit about some of the benefits of it. Now, Slippery Am can be used as a tea, can be used as a powder, mixed into cold water, it can be made into a poultice, et cetera. Now, one of the things that I've used it for, and I'm going to recommend that you do it if you ever have this problem, and you take, if you have any type of a toothache, and I've tested this and it works extremely well, if you have a toothache, what's causing the pain? Typically, inflammation is causing the pain. And to make a long story short, that nerve or whatever may be inflamed, and thereby you need to do something to deal with that underlying cause of what's causing the pain. So, if you take equal parts of Slippery Elm bark and activated charcoal, and you add a little water and you mix those two together until you get a paste/gel type of substance. And basically, you can take that substance and you can pack it down around the tooth, if you will, by itself, or you can put it on a piece of gauze and pack it around the tooth that's giving you problems. And typically, in about 15, 20 minutes, maybe less, that pain is going to stop, because the power of the charcoal, which absorbs that inflammation, as well as the Slippery Elm, which works also in inflammation, it's going to take that inflammation out, and there, which is the underlying cause of the pain. And within about 15, 20 minutes, the pain of that toothache is going to subside. Again, this is something that I have used myself, and I will do recommend in my practice. So now I would suggest that you write that down if you're listening, and keep it available to be, so that you will be able, if you or a family member or a loved one, a friend, it's having the excruciating pain of a toothache, and you have an issue with the cavity or whatever, and whatever the case might be, if you make that poultice, again, you take equal parts of charcoal, activated charcoal, and Slippery Elm bark, add a little water, enough water to get a consistency to it's almost paste-like, and then you can take enough of that paste-like substance, and you can pick it down around the tooth that's giving you the pain, or you can put it on a piece of gauze, and then set it around that tooth. Either way, just make sure that the Slippery Elm and the charcoal are on the tooth and in the tooth as far as possible, and even packed down around the gum. And again, you would typically feel a throbbing sensation because that's what's happening there, is pulling or drawing, I call it, the inflammation of that out of that particular tooth. Now, you have been listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I want to thank you for joining me. I want to remind you to join me again next week at the same time, the same place. We plan to be back next week with a very, very interesting show. Again, don't forget to join me like at phase3ministries.com/WordPress, facebook.com/naturedoc, or facebook.com/phase3ministries. Again, thank you for joining me again. I hope that you will have a blessed week. Thank you again for listening.